I read the abstract, not knowing that it would end up in a tobacco-only session, because this is actually something any kind of policy initiative that you wanted to adopt schools a way to monitor and evaluate it. So it's really a case study of how to use GIS for school-based policy adoption initiative. And unfortunately, you know, not only do I have no relationships to disclose, but nobody has ever tempted me with anything which I might be able to disclose. Sort of the background to this, although this, some of this you probably know, the CDC has school guidelines for tobacco, which includes adoption of 24/7 no tobacco use policies, is being one component. And in our state, it's where we particularly started. We actually, although in the CDC model for tobacco, those policies show up under secondhand smoke goal, we actually have them under youth initiation, because we actually do this in terms of the effect it has in terms of modeling. We have demonstration and community mobilization grants. We started with five counties, one of which was a demonstration county that had funded to have a comprehensive program, and then four had a community mobilizer, really started to get the community mobilized. We now, because we are the only state which has a constitutionally protected tobacco settlement endowment trust, we now have funded, I'm not even sure, there were in what they're now calling Wave 1, started with 20 the first year for planning grants, four of which chose not to reapply, so it was 16 in Wave 1. And I believe there's five programs in Wave 2, and those are a county, a tribe, or some combination thereof. So it's more counties than that, actually. And they are charged with doing comprehensive programs, of which getting policies adopted in the school is one of their key indicators. A school programs coordinator was hired, actually started 15 days after I did. Both of our positions were new positions. And he provides technical assistance not only to these contractors and grantees, but to anybody who's interested in. And he does things like he talks to there's an annual school nurse conference he's done presentations at, the state superintendent's conferences, he's done video conferences that the Department of Education does, but a lot of what he does is he does what he calls apple seeds. These people that he gets some kind of interest, and he just blasts any kind of information he has out to them. He's also sort of a good old boy, so he relates to these people really well, much better than I ever would. He also now coordinates our Tar Wars program that we do in coordination with our Family Practice Academy. It's now almost mechanized, where people go to the website and download it and do it, but he still has to match up the speakers to come in and do that. And again, because this is basically a one-time, you know, the speaker goes in one time, we had problems justifying doing this program when our service was created. But what we've done is started to look at it as a way to leverage. So again, getting the information out there in terms of the policy, I already talked about the communities of excellence. And our state has an asthma grant, which we are some of the partners on, and under that asthma grant policy is one of the things that they have. So the question is, how do you monitor and evaluate something like this? Well, where we started was with a list. And you know, that's one of the things you need to know is we have over 500 school districts. I think it's 539 when I just counted them. And some will close and consolidate, not nearly enough, but But we needed some way to capture what was happening. And this is a work in progress, as you'll see. It is not completed. So we started with a simple list, and that's really easy when you've got, you know, 2, 3, 4 districts, but as you get, you know, like 100, over 100, which we have now, a list is sort of long. I mean, you can see this is just, you know, the A's in the very beginning of the B's. It soon gets very, very long. So the next thing we went to was we created a database to monitor all aspects of comprehensive tobacco policy in the schools. We were a little bit over anxious on this. What has happened is the policy part of it is really about all. At the time, we had a legislatively mandated school nurse program where there were 18 districts got grants. It was for 14 nurses for those 18 districts, and 50% of their time was to be spent on tobacco. So, in fact, we actually provided them with the tobacco prevention curriculum and various things. We also, in that comprehensive program that we had funded early on, she also, part of her job was to disseminate the tobacco prevention curricula. But for the rest of them, and in fact, when this Communities of Excellence program started, one of the things was that you cannot use grant funds to buy curricula for the schools unless they have already passed a 24/7 policy. That the very first thing you have to do is that 24/7 policy. And then we'll take a proposal from you as to whether or not we'll approve it. And we'll have to look at how things are in your county. So we will see soon be redoing to monitor just the 24/7 policy. And when we need it, we'll create a curriculum database. And the rest of the components of comprehensive tobacco policies in schools, I don't know that we ever will really monitor, because I think the curricula and the policy are probably the really big ones at a state level. So next, the question then came up with, okay, you know, this is there's a geographic component to this. And when I was on the faculty at Rutgers, I worked with medical geographers. So this has been sort of honed into me that place is important. So we started doing simple maps using EpiMap, which is free from CDC. It's a part of EpiInfo. It is really pretty easy to use, and it will really do some fairly sophisticated things if I ever had the time to sit down and work through the tutorials. I might actually be able to do some really sophisticated things with it, but it really is pretty easy to do just this simple kind of mapping. And what you see here is two different maps, and they have different uses. The one is the districts that have passed policies superimposed simply onto a county map. And that one is really good if you're trying to let people sort of see where we're at, really sort of how much we still have to do. The one with all the districts allows people to identify whether their district has a policy. And that's the thing that Dave, our school policy, our school programs specialist, has said, is that particularly when he does them at things like these superintendent meetings and things like that, that people will come up and like, why doesn't my district have a policy? And they go back, and that's how some of the people that he's gotten who've gone back and started working on policy, that's how it's happened. It's, they saw the map and said, my district doesn't, why aren't we in blue? In some cases, they think that they have a policy. And he said, well, send me your policy and I'll look at it. He has yet to have a policy come in that, in fact, really was 100% tobacco-free. A lot of people think because the law requires, I believe it's from 7 to 4, and that's federal law, that inside the building must be tobacco free the entire campus is what we're trying to get. So next thing was that I had somebody among those first five who were funded, and in a conversation one day it was like, well, I could give you a map just for that. And she used this for advocating within her county to say, look, you know, what we've already accomplished, and your district hasn't. We need to get your district on board. So it was very useful for a contractor to be able to use. My intention was to do all of the counties. It starts to become overwhelming because we have 77 counties. Next thing was animated maps. And this really started because the school programs coordinator did a poster where he actually just simply did the maps for each year that we had done, where you could see it. And our service chief came up with the idea of just clicking through them. Well, I said, well, you know, PowerPoint has this ability to do animated maps. So hopefully this is going to work. I just think this is so cool. I love this. And people are impressed. I mean, the first time this was shown to the grantees, they just like, wow. Because you really do see the progress and you see what's happened over time. It does not give the sense of effort and progress if you don't have this animation, if you just look at them individually, or if you just simply look at this last map. And this last map actually is not totally updated. It's through April of last year. And what you'll find is a lot of policies go into effect just before the beginning of a school year or at the end of it, because it just makes it easier to do. So the next thing was a multivariable map. And what you see here is the solid ones are, again, the districts that have passed policies. The crosshatches are those communities of excellence, those comprehensive community-based programs. And the ones that are in blue crosshatching are the wave one. The ones that have green crosshatching are the wave two. They are just finishing up their first planning year, the wave two. The wave one are just finishing their fourth year, so their third year of intervention. And so what this does is this shows, begins to give a hint of whether or not it works. But the thing is there are school districts that passed it before. And so just because a district is in a communities of excellence community does not mean necessarily that it was the communities of excellence. Although that's how my service chief tends to interpret this. So I did not get this done. We had a major E. coli outbreak that anybody who was available in the health department got pulled off to do data entry and interviewing for, and then I got an eye infection. So I didn't get this map done. But what I want to do is, and let me go back so that you can see it, is what I want to do is instead of all...
Use the pointer on the mouse so we can see where you're pointing.
Oh, well... actually, I was just sort of... I'll do that. What I wanted to do was, instead of where it's solid, having one color, coloring it to tell whether or not in these CX counties, was it before or after they became a CX? So do you know, so basically, is it the efforts, in fact, of the Communities of Excellence program that produced all of these? Because if you notice, most of them are, in fact, in CX. But it could be, I think, you know, with one of the earlier ones, which happened first? Well, by having these school policies, you've now activated people in general in terms of tobacco, too, just through the efforts to get the policy passed. So that may have made them ready to be able to get one of these grants. Then this is the latest iteration. This one was supposed to be done with the ESRI, and I'm blanking on their product. It's much more sophisticated. It is sort of it's the GIS program that's the largest used. And I could have done everything that's in here within that. Instead, the map was done in EpiMap. I copied it over in PowerPoint. I did this graph in PowerPoint and copied it over into the slide, and I could have done a more sophisticated map, as well as some of the other things I'd like to do. But what I'd like to do is, by having these graphs here, is do the same animated series, but you'll be able to see where this area grows in terms of the proportion of students. Now, it's going to start to grow sort of, well, actually, this one's an old one, because it should be 51% is what we're at right now, so it should be somewhere about here, I guess. It will now start to grow pretty slowly because most of the really big districts have already passed policies, so it's now going to be the really small ones. So we'll add probably a 1% per year or so, or per semester, actually. Things to come. Are districts more likely to pass a policy if they're adjacent to one that's already done so? And that's where I need to go to the ESRI product, because I can do adjacency analysis and some analysis that take in things like population, throw in a lot of different data, and really look at that. Because right now, nobody really knows what are the factors that make it more likely that you're going to be able to get a policy adopted. We know that adopting policies has certain effects, but how do you get it done? And I've seen a lot of people in a lot of states, they do sort of what I call the garbage can method, where they just sort of like, they just try to do all of it, the entire state. And we know that if we focus our efforts, we're going to be more successful. The grantee map, to show just their geographic area, similar to that county one. And then geostatistical analysis to determine the characteristics which predict passage. Actually, this first one here, this is because I have the feeling, and this is just from having worked with these maps for so long, that you're more likely to pass a policy if you're adjacent to a district which is already. And it makes some sense because, you know, you go to a football game and they make the announcements. And I will tell you anecdotally, everything we have is these policies are self-enforcing. So that's basically it.
Yeah. Oklahoma, is that a tobacco-producing state?
No.
Okay.
We are not a however, we are a favorite of the tobacco industry. We actually have our state advisory committee is mandated by legislation with the 20 specific things. That actually was an RJR bill, and to everything we can find out, although it was distributed to a number of states, we are the only state that took it. Now, our tobacco control advocates were able to take, and when it was clear that we couldn't just get rid of it, took and made it into something which became useful. The one major thing that's there, and we've been able to sort of finagle that one even, is one of those positions is a retailer. And we've been able to get somebody who's a retired retailer who is very friendly to tobacco control. The first person who was in that position was anything but. He's the president of the Convenience Store Association. When the advisory committee issued the first state plan, he issued sort of the minority report, only he distributed to the legislature before the official version was. He's the kind of person you love to hate. And that's sort of how we took it. Including our communications department did this button for our commissioner at the time. Number one fan of Mike Thornbrew. And we just sort of, we were wary of him, but we didn't let him get to us. And we're able to then, because he was not attend, we also sort of scheduled the meeting so we knew he wouldn't be able to attend, and the, or thought he wouldn't be able to. And then the committee adopted that if you miss more certain number of meetings, that we would ask the governor to replace you. They can't adopt saying you can't be, but they could ask the governor to. And the industry, if you go into the documents, has found Oklahoma to be a very friendly place for them. The amount, when you look at the dollars, going to legislators' campaigns, you would think it was a tobacco state. So, what you see, though, the resistance to a lot of this, what most of the superintendents are afraid of is the 300-pound guy who, at a football game, they tell can't smoke. We have yet to have that happen. And even there's a CD that CDC produced where they came in and interviewed a number of our people, and there is a security director for one of the districts. And he is quoted as basically saying, you know, I was just really, I thought this was just going to be just really awful. It was going to be a nightmare to have to enforce. He said, this has been so easy. They make announcements. They inform people. Part of the adoption of the policies is a good communication plan. They announce it at the beginning of football games. And there really have not been the problems, but a lot of, and that's how the school specialist actually does it a lot, is he hooks superintendents up with superintendents so that one who's already done it and had the experience is able to say, you know, yeah, I had your same fears. And, you know, it's now, as I look at it, it was a no-brainer. I don't know why I was so afraid.
So, your maps, it looks like you have about a third of the school districts that are 24/7. Is there a plan?
It's not a third. It's 100, and because we're at about 100 and somewhere, we're just under 150 probably at this point, and we have 500 and basically 540.
Okay, so about a fourth then.
Yeah.
A little under a fourth over. So, are there plans to continue on, or are you just doing a few schools at a time? You need to get them to on board for the
those. Actually, let's see if I can get to the map. Those communities of excellence, communities, here, that's one of the things that they are supposed to be working on. And there is one, I don't think you can really see it, but there is a county down here, 100% of their districts have passed policies. And that was something we celebrated. And every time that one of the communities of excellence grantees gets all of their districts, at the next grantee meeting, they're given an award for that. But it is one of the things that they're supposed to be working on. I mean, there's a whole set of things that they're supposed to be working on. There's a set of mandated things, and then they can choose in some optional ones. School policy is one of the mandatory that they must work on getting done. And some of them have had more success than others. In some cases, it's the grantee. In some cases, it's some of these districts. Particularly if you notice, and of course, none of these are CX, but these are going to be probably, I'll bet, very, very difficult because you're talking about very, very rural. I mean, these are frontier counties and very independent. It's very much culture. In that school nurse program that I talked about, we had a nurse who called up very upset because she was trying to do this. And not only did the coach use smokeless tobacco, but the coach gave football players smokeless tobacco. So it's that kind of culture. When you get out into, once you get outside the urban areas, you're into agricultural areas and where it's just, it's a part of, our school specialist actually was a smokeless user till he had a cancer scare with something, a nodule on his wrist, turned out not to be cancer, but it was enough to get him to quit. His grandfather was one who gave him his first smokeless. And when he was in high school and college and going out and he'd help with the harvest, actually that's how he made money. He'd use it. I mean, because you work from sun up to sundown, you get as much in as what you can, and that's when they used it. And he might not use it again till the next harvest season. So it is a really different culture, and that's some of it. I mean, some of these you go into, and it's like, it's not that they think that this is a bad idea necessarily, but it's don't tell me what to do. And that's where that superintendent to superintendent does a lot of good, plus having the local people, but but that is one of the things that these districts, it's the places that are not community of excellence, and I think we will continue to get some in some of those areas. The largest is going to be in these where they're crosshatched. And at some point, maybe. Now, actually, up in this area, this is Cherokee area, Cherokee Nation. Cherokee Nation is part of their STEPS US grant, is working on. In fact, this is not an up-to-date map because they got a whole bunch of, and they're working on getting all of their districts, but they, like, We had 30 last year, of which 15 of them the Cherokee were responsible for. So it's a whole set of things. It's not one group of people necessarily that are working on it. The tribes, as they come on board, are trying to get it done. And at some point, it also, and that will be interesting to see when it's a tipping point, both in terms of districts that just sort of, you know, but also there comes that point where there's enough districts, it's similar to Clean Indoor Air. You know, when you start with the municipalities at a certain point, then you go to the statewide. And I don't know at what point, but at some point it will have become the norm in the state. But I think that is closer than what I would have said last year, but it still is not, you know, it's not an immediate kind of thing. Because it is a lot of districts, and it takes just as much work to get a district that has one K through 8 school that maybe has, you know, 90 kids total in the school as what it did to get Oklahoma City, which is our largest school district in the state, and Oklahoma City is the 31st largest city in the country. So that's...
for a long time, and like, I love you, Dr. Elders, just as once. Yeah. Gonna.
Hello.
I know.
Yes. I grabbed the pen. Oh, yeah.